the first time I trained for an Ironman, I had a hard time thinking about the Ironman as a whole, right? I couldn't think of it. It just seemed way too overwhelming. So I only ever thought about the swim or the bike or the run. I only thought of it in portions. And so with going through cancer treatments, it was the same thing. If I tried to look too far in the future or think about, you know, what I was doing, you know, even 2 months away, or the fear, it was just too much. So I had to stay very right. much in the present, you know, just think about, you know, what do I need to do to get through today, and not think too far in the future, not think about, you know, the whole thing. So I think trying to stay present and trying to break down whatever your challenge is into smaller pieces and only try to accomplish one piece at a time. That would be my biggest recommendation for people.
Welcome to the Passion Struck podcast. My name is John Miles, a former combat veteran and multi-industry CEO turned entrepreneur and human performance expert. Each week, we showcase an inspirational person and message that helps you unlock your hidden potential and unleash your creativity and leadership abilities. Thank you for spending time with me today, and let's get igniting. Welcome to the Passion Struck podcast. This is such a personal episode for me, but one that can actually inspire millions around the world. It's personal because in September of 2020, I found out my younger sister was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and it has changed her life and the life of our own family ever since that point in time. And it was through that research that I met an amazing lady named Cindy Hooper, who we're going to talk to today. Cindy lives in Ottawa, Canada. She's a mom, wife, triathlete, and has survived pancreatic cancer for 8 years. This amazing woman completed the Ironman Canada in the midst of doing chemotherapy treatment in 2013 and has since finished the Ironman Vichy in France, the Ironman 70.3 World Championships in South Africa, two ITU Triathlon World Championships in Mexico and Switzerland, the Boston Marathon, and a 50-kilometer ultra. Cindy says that cancer has brought a lot of fear and pain in her life, but it's also brought a few gifts as well, including a huge desire to give back and a love of life she never dreamt possible. In the last 8 years, she has raised just over $250,000 for cancer research at the Ottawa Hospital by leading several running teams at the Ottawa Race Weekend. And there is so much in this episode that Cindy will reveal about what led up to her diagnosis, what it was like when she got the diagnosis, how she overcame her fears and actually did that triathlon during the middle of getting chemotherapy. And then all the lessons she has learned that she wants to impart on you from that experience. I can't wait to share this with you today, and thank you for joining us. Hi, as I was researching the perfect quote for this episode, I ran across one by Francis of Assisi, who said, "You start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you're doing the impossible." And when you meet this guest today, you're going to understand the importance of this message. I am thrilled today to have Cindy Hooper, who is passion struck about helping people live their fullest while she raises awareness for fundraising for pancreatic cancer. Welcome to the show, Cindy. How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
I am doing good, and I'm so excited to have you here today. And I first met you when I was doing web research on pancreatic cancer, and your story was so inspirational because I was particularly looking for stories of survivors who have beat this deadly disease, and you know what you've done since your diagnosis has been truly amazing. You know, the purpose of our show is to try to help others understand how they can unlock their hidden potential and ignite and prioritize their passion journeys. But I wanted to start talking to you about, you know, what was your life like before the cancer diagnosis? And what was life like back 8, 9 years ago?
So I was diagnosed at the very beginning of 2013. And in 2012, the year leading up to that, my life was very full, especially with my husband and my two boys and our triathlon training that my husband and I did together. We had decided the year prior in 2011 that we would do our first Ironman together. So an Ironman is a 4-kilometer swim, a 180-kilometer bike ride, and then a marathon. And we decided that we wanted to try doing one, and we chose an Ironman close to our home here. We live in Ottawa, Canada, and we chose Ironman Mont Tremblant. So in 2012, we did a lot of training to prepare ourselves for that Ironman. It was a lot of fun. We did most of the training together with a great group of friends. And then in August of 2012, we went to Tremblant. My goal was to try to qualify for the Hawaii Ironman World Championships. And I had a really, really good race. I met all my goals, but I missed qualifying by just 2 spots.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was a fantastic day. I was super happy with everything I achieved. And because I was so close to qualifying for Hawaii, I decided I'd like to try again. So a bunch of the people that had trained for Ironman Mont Tremblant immediately registered for another Ironman the following summer. So that would be in August of 2013. And this time we decided to do the Ironman in Whistler, BC. So we register for this Ironman, and I'm going through the fall training, continuing to train hard for this Ironman in 2013. And everything's going pretty well. And in December, which would be my 50th birthday at the time, I started getting some weird things happening. I experienced pain in my upper middle abdomen, a couple of times. On a few other occasions, I had some mid-back pain. And then a few weeks later, I started to have some GI symptoms, like some diarrhea. I also just wasn't feeling very well, starting to get very tired. But, you know, it was around Christmas and, you know, we were busy and it's the flu season time, so we didn't think too much of it. And then around Christmas, I started getting really itchy skin. And I remember it being so itchy and so crazy because I was actually, you know, scratching the palms of my hands and inside my ears. So very strange. We didn't know what was going on. And then on January 1st, I went for a run with my girlfriend. It was supposed to be just a really easy, fun run, and it was extremely difficult. I remember having to walk up just the slightest of inclines and stopping my Garmin. And I came home and told my husband about that and then slept for a couple of hours in the middle of the day, which at the time was very unusual for me. So he was getting a little bit concerned about everything that was going on. And then the next morning when we woke up, which was January 2nd, he noticed that my eyes were jaundiced. So he could see the yellow discoloration in my eyes.
Right.
And so with everything that was going on, he thought perhaps I had gallstones. So my husband is a physician at the Ottawa Hospital. So he arranged for me to go in and get some blood work done and an ultrasound to see what was going on. And that ultrasound, unfortunately, didn't reveal gallstones. It revealed pancreatic cancer. So when I was told...
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was told, first of all, that, you know, they said, oh, you have a tumor on your pancreas. And I was like, well, a pancreas? I thought we were here for, you know, my gallbladder. And I was just very confused. And, you know, when they mentioned the word tumor, it didn't seem like that big a deal. It's like, oh, well, you know, we'll just get rid of it. And I didn't really even know what the pancreas did. So I thought, couldn't be that important, right?
Right.
So I guess the the physician could tell that I was confused. And then she finally said, you know, you have pancreatic cancer, to which, you know, that when you hear the word cancer, right, you really take notice. We were shocked, devastated. I mean, I was in the best shape of my life. I was only 50 years old, which is relatively young for this type of cancer. I don't have any family history whatsoever of cancer. I had none of the risk factors for pancreatic cancer. So this somebody telling my husband and I that I had pancreatic cancer was just devastating. And she left us alone for a few minutes. And I turned to John and I said, pancreatic cancer. So is this a good one or a bad one to get? You know, we had other friends that had right. cancer, and some are better than others, right? And he said, it's a bad one. It's a very, very bad one. And we just both started to cry.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. You know, and I can't even imagine what you were experiencing. And as we've, you know, gotten to know each other, you know, the way my sister found out was not much different than the way you did. She was very healthy, always had been a non-smoker, in very good shape, yoga, big runner, very, very active. And she had visited my parents and at the tail end of that visit felt a bit tired, but just thought she was coming down with a cold. And then, you know, over the next week to 10 days, just felt more and more tired and then had some of the same symptoms you brought up and went in. And, you know, the doctors thought there was something going on with her bile duct. And so they went in to check that out. And when they did, they found pancreatic cancer in her as well. And very similar, you know, she's 47 at the time. And like you had none of the, you know, I think people think about cancer and they think it's, you know, you're going to have precursors for it, or it's going to, you know, hereditary or something. But she was exactly like you, in great shape, no indication that this would happen. They have no idea why it happened. And then suddenly, you know, you walk in and your life has changed. So you get this terrible diagnosis. And, you know, what was transpiring over the next days to weeks in your mind about it?
With pancreatic cancer, so the average survival for pancreatic cancer is only 6 months. And 75% of people who get pancreatic cancer die within the first year. Those are the horrible stats. So the first concern was whether or not I was going to be eligible for surgery to remove the tumor. So 75% of people that get pancreatic cancer are not eligible for surgery. And there isn't a chemotherapy that works. So that's why the statistics are so horrible. So our immediate concern was whether or not I was eligible for surgery. So the next day we went back into the hospital, they did a CT scan. And then, so that was on Thursday. And then the next day on Friday, I went in to meet with a surgeon who had looked at the CT scan to determine whether or not right. surgery was going to be viable. And thankfully it was. And so I had surgery the next Monday. So about 6 days after my diagnosis, I was in the hospital for Whipple surgery.
Yeah. And for those who aren't familiar, because before I had heard about pancreatic cancer, I'd never heard about Whipple surgery, and it's not a simple surgery. So can you explain what they have to do?
So my surgery lasted 7.5 hours. They removed my gallbladder, bile duct, half of my stomach, and half of my pancreas, which is yeah. where the tumor was, as well as my entire duodenum. So it's a huge surgery. And the reason why they take out a lot of things other than the pancreas, which is where the tumor is because the chance of the tumor going outside the pancreas is very high. And so that's why they take out such a large number of internal organs. So my surgery lasted 7.5 hours, and then I was in the hospital for 10 days. And the reason for the long hospital stay is because they're trying to manage pain. and make sure that everything's working and I can eat and everything is going through okay.
Right, of course.
So my hospital stay was very, very difficult. I had a lot of pain. My epidural that was supposed to be in for about 4 days failed after 24 hours. They put it in again and then it failed again. So we were left with trying to manage the pain from the surgery with narcotics. And it turns out that I'm very sensitive to narcotics. We didn't know that. So I had a lot of vomiting and seeing things, hallucinations, nightmares. So it was extremely difficult. But I was discharged from the hospital after 10 days and then came home. And it was about 6 weeks, 5 weeks that I was on narcotics to keep trying to control the pain and just basically doing nothing.
So how long after the surgery, because I understand sometimes they'll do chemotherapy and then they do the surgery. And in your case, they went in right away, did the surgery, and then you did chemotherapy afterwards. How long was that interval?
So chemo started 6 weeks after my surgery. So they wanted to wait until they felt I had recovered enough from the surgery to be able to start chemo. So my narcotics for pain medication ended at 5 weeks. So at 6 weeks, they started chemotherapy. And so that was around mid-February. And my chemotherapy went right through until mid-September.
And so you're in the middle of... The way I understood it was you're in the middle of getting some of this chemotherapy treatment and you come up with this idea that you want to do this Ironman. How did that manifest itself?
So as I mentioned before, I was already registered for the Ironman right before I got sick. And the Ironman is in Whistler, British Columbia, which is... an area that I had never been to before, and I was really looking forward to traveling there. I was going with my husband and a big group of friends that were going to be doing the Ironman with us. And we had rented a couple of beautiful chalets in Whistler, and I was just really, really looking forward to the trip. However, I was also terrified that the cancer was going to come back and I wouldn't even live to 6 months. So there was this, I really, really hope that I'm going to live until August of 2013. But if I do, I really, really would love to be able to make the trip out to Whistler, BC to see that area and make the trip with my friends. So that's kind of how it started, was that just became a goal to live that long. And then if I did live that long, to sort of celebrate it with the trip out to Whistler. And then as I got further into the chemo and further away from the surgery and started to do more walking, and I would get on my bike trainer in the basement and do some biking, and then I was able to get back into the pool. So this was all happening sort of mid-March. And then I was like, you know, if I can make the trip out to Whistler, BC, if I'm still alive, maybe I could try to train and still take part in the Ironman. So I had a follow-up appointment with my surgeon, my husband.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what this conversation was like.
Yeah, so I was starting to feel a little bit better. I was on my trainer. I was going out for walks. I was doing a bit of swimming. And I said to my surgeon, so I'm registered for this Ironman in August, and this is like mid-March, and I'm starting to feel a lot better. Do you think it might be possible for me to take part in Ironman Canada? And his reaction was, well, Cindy, I don't even know why a healthy person would want to do that, let alone you're going to go through all this chemotherapy. I also had a month of radiation, sort of mid-April to mid-May. So that was another factor. But, you know, he didn't say no. And so I took that as a, let's just give it a try and see how it goes.
Yeah, yep. I did want to ask you, while you were going through this thought process, did anyone try to stop and discourage you from continuing? Were you getting support along the way?
So there is very good evidence that supports exercise during chemotherapy and radiation and whatever else type of cancer treatments people might be going through. Training for an Ironman is obviously, you know, a little bit beyond what those recommendations are. So what was happening behind the scenes, which I didn't really, wasn't really aware of, is that my husband, who's a physician, was speaking with my surgeon and my oncologist and my radiation therapist to make sure that any swimming, biking, and running that I was doing was safe.
Right.
You know, our primary objective was to get me through all of my treatments without getting sick, without my immune system being compromised. So while I was like just going along doing all my training, and there definitely were conversations in the background, and John was watching to make sure that I was keeping it safe. So there were a couple of instances where we were out on long bike rides and I was getting tired. And when I get tired, you know, I stop eating and then I get a little bit grumpy. And John noticed on a couple of rides that this was happening. And he just said, "Cindy, that's it. You're done. You're not going any further." And a couple of times, like, we were pretty far out, you know, from where we live. You know, we would be 75 kilometers out in the country. And I'd say, "Well, I can't stop now. You know, look at where we are." And he would just call one of my kids or a friend to come and pick me up in the car. And so he, I also had a coach at the time. And so my husband, John, and my coach were both really watching what was going on. And certainly the amount of training that I was doing and the intensity of the training was completely different from what I had done the year before when I was healthy. So in 2012, when I was healthy training for Ironman Mont Tremblant, I was training about, you know, 14 to 18 hours a week with lots of high intensity stuff. While I was going through chemotherapy and radiation, I was only training about, you know, 8 to 12 hours a week, and everything was very low intensity, zone one, nice and easy, just getting out there and putting in some kilometers.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like you don't pick easy triathlon locations. Mont Tremblant, if you know, those who haven't been, is a beautiful location that has mountains and ski resorts, and Whistler's are even has even higher altitude. So you're going into this doing a behemoth of a triathlon, not just, none of them are easy, but this one had some other factors. So as you're going through this and you're doing your training, you know, what were the hardest things that you had to overcome on a daily basis?
So my chemotherapy routine was, I would go 3 weeks in a row and then have a week off of chemotherapy, 3 weeks in a row, have a week off. So the idea of the week off is it gives your time for your body to rebuild and re-strengthen. So every Friday I would go for blood work, and that blood work, your white blood cells, red blood cells, all the blood work has to be at a certain level to make sure you're okay enough to go to chemotherapy. And I would go on Mondays. So my blood work always came back within acceptable ranges, and I would go to my next chemotherapy on Monday. So I would go Monday at noon and I'd feel okay. I went to most of my chemotherapy appointments on my own. I would drive there, get the chemotherapy, drive home. And by the evening when my husband came home, I would start to be extremely nauseous, like to the point where I'm laying on the couch with a bucket just waiting to be sick. And then I was always able to fall asleep okay that night. And then by Tuesday, I was still feeling pretty nauseous, but I could get outside, go for a walk or a swim, something easy. And then as the week progressed, I felt less and less nauseated. So by Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I would be able to go out on my bike and do a bike ride, and on the weekend, and then it would start again. So one thing my chemotherapy doctor had said, that I most likely wouldn't be able to get all 18 rounds of chemotherapy, because it is very normal for blood levels to drop, and then you have to miss one or two, if not three. That would be completely normal.
Right.
But I did all 18 rounds. And she attributes that to the fact that I was very strong, healthy and strong going into the surgery, and then very active through all of my treatments. And so I was able to get them all. So that's a really positive thing. The things that were the hardest, that was what your question was, the things that were the hardest were feeling like I wanted to be with my husband and my friends outside training through the summer, because that's what I love to do. You know, some people like to garden or read books, play cards, whatever. For me, I just love to swim, bike, and run. So I wanted to be out there with them, enjoying the summer and doing this training. And most of the time I was able to. I mean, there were times I wasn't, especially on the Mondays and Tuesdays. But even when I was out there, I couldn't do what I was able to do before. And that was really difficult. So it's hard, you know, when you're going through chemotherapy, you're trying to be careful to preserve energy. And at the same time, I was trying to, you know, keep up with my friends with swimming, biking, and running. So there was this struggle of not pushing myself, but wanting to be out there enjoying. And then just, the nausea. I didn't have any other, there are other side effects of the chemotherapy I was on. I was on gemcitabine, and I would go in and a nurse would check to see if I had any mouth sores. I would say, no, no mouth sores. She would actually make me open my mouth and look with a light. Right. Some people get problems with their hands and feet. I never had any of that either. So chemotherapy and radiation for me was a lot easier than what I went through with my surgery. My Whipple surgery was, I found it extremely difficult, extremely painful. It took a long time for me to recover from that. So I think once I had gone through Whipple surgery, the chemo and radiation didn't seem as bad. So, you know, I think maybe for other people that go through chemo and radiation without having something like Whipple surgery first, maybe it makes it more difficult. I'm not sure. I just know that in my experience, after Whipple's, the chemo and radiation was not nearly as difficult.
Yes. And I don't think you know this about me, but I ended up going to college on an athletic scholarship for cross country and track. And so I've done my fair share of training. And even under the best of circumstances, there are those days that you don't want to get out of bed and you don't want to lace the shoes on, you know, and it's a constant struggle, even under the best conditions. How did you get through those periods? Because I have to imagine there were days when you didn't want to do the training and you mustered the power within to do it.
I think I always wanted to do the training. I think that was the part that was different. You're right. In 2012, when I was training for my first Ironman completely healthy, there were days I was like, oh, it's so hard. I don't have the time. I don't really want to do it. But in 2013, when I was going through chemo and radiation, I just wanted to be outside with my friends. And when I was outside swimming, biking, and running, it made me feel good. It made me feel healthy. And I think it was a big distraction from feeling like I was a cancer patient. And so I always felt better when I was outside training than when I was in the house feeling sick. So I really didn't have any of those days where I didn't want to go out and train. I always wanted to, because it was such a positive thing for me. It was such a diversion. And mentally, I think that was very healthy for me to be outside doing something that I loved with my friends and my husband.
Did you know that Forbes magazine recently cited that over 70% of individuals who did personal development courses, masterminds, or one-on-one coaching benefited from improved work performance, relationships, and more effective communication skills? Here at Passionstruck, we are obsessed with self-development, coaching, and mentorship. That is why we've created a free resource to help you unlock your hidden potential. Because people doing great things in business and life are just like you. They have just gotten some coaching along the way, and we have got you covered so you can too. Let us show you the systems and frameworks that we teach growth-minded individuals to help them to unlock their purpose and live and build a passion-struck life that gets predictable results and gives you the freedom that you actually want. Go to passionstruck.com/coaching right now to get started. You've done this training. You then go to Whistler and the event, the day of the event unfolds. Can you take me through through that and then the event itself?
So first of all, when we realized that we were going to be able to make the trip out to Whistler, because I was still alive, we never imagined that I would be able to complete the Ironman. We went out there with the intention that I would do the swim. I knew I'd be able to do the swim because we had swam 4 kilometers a number of times in our training. And the way that the bike course is set up at Whistler is that the first third of it, we would go one way up into Callahan, I think it's like into the mountains, and then come back to Whistler. And then the second portion was two thirds of the bike course, and we would go the opposite direction, do an out and back, and come back to Whistler. So our plan was that I would do the swim and at least the first one third of the bike course, and then we would see how things were.
Right. And I understand the bike course is not flat at all.
It's really tough. So the swim went really, really well. I did it in an hour and 15 minutes, which is actually a really good time. We were shocked. I was expecting to be around an hour 30. So when I came out of the water, my husband and friends were like, oh, wow, that's great. And the timing is very important because there's cutoffs. So if you don't finish the swim by a certain time or you don't finish the bike by a certain time, you can't keep going on in the Ironman.
Yes.
So the fact that I came out of the water 15 minutes ahead of time was great because that 15 minutes basically gets added on to the cutoff for the bike time, right? Because I have to be done the bike by, let's just say, 3 p.m. And so now I had 15 more minutes for the bike.
So you're kind of taking it stage by stage. So now you're in the first phase of the bike. And then what ends up happening?
Okay, so we do the... Oh, you had asked, you had said it was hilly. So the first one,
yes.
We went out and then up. So there was a climb up into the Olympic Park. So that was tough, but then you come back down and back to Whistler. And that went really well. I was feeling great. And so my husband was with me. He biked with me and he said, so do you want to continue? Yes. So the second portion is we went out to Pemberton Valley. So on the way out to Pemberton Valley, you go down, down, down this series of hills. You get out to the valley. There's a long stretch flat. You come back and then you've got to come up this series of hills to get back to Whistler. So as we headed out going down the hills, it was fantastic, right? It was super easy and we were going really fast. We get out to Pemberton Valley and we're on the flat stretch going out. And as we're going out, we pass by, you can see all these farms that are stretching out with these very long driveways, right? So I can see up ahead that there's a bunch of people congregated at the end of one of the driveways and they've got all these signs. And as we approach, I can see that one of the signs says, go Cindy, go. And my name is spelled with an S. So I see on the sign, go, Cindy with an S, go. And as I pass by, I yell up to John and I say, John, I think that sign might have been for me. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. He says, we'll stop on the way back and say hi. So we go to the end, we go to the turnaround, we come back, we pull up to the driveway, stop. I unclip and I'm standing there and the people are looking at me and I'm like, I'm Cindy, your sign says, go, Cindy, go. And they just like, there must've been 15 or 20 people and they just erupted and they're like, oh, we're so happy to see you. My story had been on global news right across Canada. And so a lot of people in Vancouver and Whistler had heard the story that I was coming up to try
That's
to do.
Great.
So, you know, we're talking, chatting. And John's like, Cindy, like we have a time limit here to get back to Whistler. So we better go. So we headed back and we start going up these hills and oh my goodness, it was so hard. I couldn't even make it all the way up some of the hills. I would have to stop halfway. And at the top of each hill, I think there was about 4 or 5 series of hills. And at the top of each hill, John would make me stop and have something to eat because he didn't want me to get, you know, low on energy. And I would say, no, I can't keep stopping like this and eating. We're not going to make the time cutoff. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, we have so much time, which I find out later is not true. But he had to say that to get me to actually stop and have something to eat. So we continue. Oh, my gosh. I felt like I was going so slow. I was so worried we weren't going to make the cutoff. And we get to the top of the last hill and we're coming into Whistler. And a bunch of my friends and family had came out to watch and they were all cheering and they're like, oh my God, you made it. You made it. And, you know, John and I just couldn't believe it. Like, we were shocked. You know, it's a 180-kilometer bike ride. It's really far. And, yes. You know, we just couldn't believe it. So as we're rolling into the transition area, John's like, well, now what do you want to do? Like, we've made the bike cutoff. We just couldn't believe that this could even ever happen. And I was like, well, we got to go out on the marathon course and see what happens. So we go into the change tents, get our run stuff on, and we head out on the run course. And I think it's about 7 hours that we have to complete the marathon, which is a pretty long time. You actually don't have to run the whole thing, but you do have to either do a very purposeful fast walk or, you know, jog walk. So that was our plan, was to walk. And then anytime that there was a bit of a downhill, I would try to jog down the hills. So that's what we did. And again, we were out on the run course and there was so many people that, you know, they saw my bib and my name and they would call out and say, Cindy, we heard about you on the news and, you know, way to go. We really hope you're able to finish the Ironman. And so that was really something very
positive. That must have been very, very inspirational for you.
It was incredible, the number of people on the sidelines and other athletes, right? Because there would be people walking behind us or passing us and saying, oh, way to go. And the marathon course at Ironman Canada in Whistler is two loops. And so we did this first loop fast enough that John said, Cindy, you can walk the entire second loop and we will still finish before the cutoff. So that's what I want you to do. Because again, he didn't want me to get too tired and compromise. I still had three more chemotherapy treatments when I would go back to Ottawa. So I was not finished chemo. I was between my 15th and 16th rounds out of 18. So I said, okay. And so we walked the second half of the course and we would stop and get food at aid stations and talk to people.
Yeah, that might have even made it more memorable because you got to interact and you got to experience it in a different way.
And actually see all the stuff that's on the aid tables. I had an Ironman, which, you know, I had no idea when I did the one in Tremblant. It was like, you know, give me a banana and eating it as I kept running type thing and taking some liquids. But it was like, oh, wow, there's pretzels and oranges and crackers. And so, yeah, it was a completely different experience. And the cutoff for an Ironman is at midnight. So we knew we had to be done by midnight and we finished at about 11:30 p.m. And so as we came into the finish shoot, it was just incredible. There was so many people, you know, it was pitch dark, but there was all these lights and people were cheering. And as we crossed
the finish line,
it was unbelievable. It was something that we could never imagine ever happening. And I've Googled people that complete an Ironman while on chemotherapy, and I haven't found anybody else.
Yeah, so. It's such an amazing feat. It's an amazing feat being healthy, much as your doctor said, much less.
Yeah. Yeah. So
having a condition.
The really great thing is because I had started a fundraising page about 3 months into after my diagnosis while I was training, to try to raise money for cancer research. And because my story was covered by Global News right across Canada, we were able to raise $50,000.
Oh, that's wonderful.
As a result of all of this. So not only completing the Ironman, but raising a lot of money, which felt really great. Yeah. And raising awareness for pancreatic cancer.
Like, what an amazing story and an uplifting one under some just amazing hardships you were going through. What do you think as you were going through that were the biggest things, you know, outside of the chemo, what were some of the biggest things you had to overcome to complete that journey?
You know, probably the biggest thing was living with the fear. I mean, that's still a reality for me. The 5-year survival rate for pancreatic cancer is only 8%, and there are no 10-year survival stats, and I'm at 8 years. So, you know, there's this constant feeling that the cancer is going to come back. And certainly early on, the risk of the cancer coming back was extremely high. So I would say that during that 8 months time of going through chemotherapy and radiation and training for Ironman Canada, my biggest obstacle, whatever you want to call it, was the fear that I was dealing with. Many, many sleepless nights, lots of tears, you know, not only for me, for my husband, for my family. Living with pancreatic cancer is an extremely, extremely difficult thing.
Right.
Even to this day. So I would say that for sure was the biggest thing. And then just, you know, the side effects of the chemotherapy and radiation and all of the appointments. It's that whole dealing with cancer treatments is very difficult.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask, do you think you can have success without adversity, or do you think that there's a link between the two, whether you're healthy or not?
Well, I think people feel adversity. I mean, always, right? It's just, what's the degree of the adversity? I mean, even when I was training for Ironman Mont Tremblant, when I was healthy, you know, there was adversity. It's just, it was very different than in 2013. So your question was,
like, what is your advice for, you know, overcoming adversity? Because you've had to do it in a very extreme way. Most people don't have to do it to that extreme, but, you know, what advice would you give to overcoming adversities that you face?
I think, you know, breaking down whatever it is, whatever your challenge is, whatever the difficulty is breaking it down into smaller pieces so that it doesn't seem so big. You know, I've told this story before. The first time I trained for an Ironman, I had a hard time thinking about the Ironman as a whole, right? I couldn't think of it. It just seemed way too overwhelming. So I only ever thought about the swim or the bike or the run. I only thought of it in portions. And so with going through cancer treatments, it was the same thing. If I tried to look too far in the future or think about, you know, what I was doing, you know, even 2 months away, or the fear, it was just too much. So I had to stay very much in the present, you know, just think about, you know, what do I need to do to get through today, and not think too far in the future, not think about, you know, the whole thing. So I think trying to stay present and trying to break down whatever your challenge is into smaller pieces and only try to accomplish one piece at a time. That would be my biggest recommendation for people.
Yeah, it's actually a philosophy that I've implemented myself time and time again over my life. And, you know, I had this boss when I was at Lowe's named Steve Stone. And, you know, he told me it was great. I had a great talent that I could see the vision of the future years and years in advance. And he said, the issue is, you know, is when you're trying to lead people to a destination, most people can't see that far ahead. And so you have to really break it down into actionable steps that they can accomplish along that journey, and break it down to, you know, goals that you can accomplish. And once you accomplish the goal, then you extend it and extend it and extend it. And it's kind of the same thing you're bringing up. So with that, you know, what advice would you give on, you know, you have adversity, but with adversity can come negative emotions. So how do you deal with negative emotions?
So my biggest negative emotions would have been the fear. And so for me, it's just trying to block it out.
So for you, was it fear that you wouldn't be able to, I mean, there's fear of the cancer, but there's also, was there also fear that you wouldn't be able to accomplish the goal of competing in, you know, not only that triathlon, but other things you've done?
Well, in terms of the Ironman, no, I never had any fear of not completing the Ironman, because that was never even a goal, right? Like I said, our plan was to just go and do the swim and the first part of the bike course. And I knew I could do that. So my goal wasn't to complete the Ironman. My goal was just to go and participate. And hopefully my participation would increase awareness of pancreatic cancer and raise some money. So I never had a fear of not completing the Ironman. My fear was of dying. My fear was of the cancer coming back. And that at the time was huge. I mean, keeping me up at night, tears, so many discussions with my husband. And so the only way that I felt I could deal with that was, you know, to block it out. Like there's, the statistics are just so horrible. You can't, like, you might say, oh, well, you know, do some research and find some positive results. You know, I went online to try to find some long-term survivors and I couldn't find any. You know, every time I looked online to try to find someone who had lived past 2 years, it was just, it made it worse because I couldn't find anybody. And then I did find a few people, and then at around the 2 year mark, they died. So the only way that I could deal with that fear is just, you know, blocking it out and trying not to think about it, which I managed to do pretty well during the day because, you know, you're busy and stuff is going on, but it would be at night.
Right.
Or falling asleep, or if I'd wake up in the middle of the night and it would come into my mind, that would be really difficult. So, you know, with a lot of things, you can't just block it out, right? I mean, lots of people face adversity and things that have to be dealt with. You can't just block it out and ignore it. So I guess that example of adversity is very different.
Yes, I I've never had to have that type of adversity. You know, I've experienced different types of trauma, whether it's been military trauma or physical assault trauma, things like that. And you kind of have to go through the same thing. But, you know, my way of coping with it is you have to figure out what those thoughts are that are stopping, you know, that continually build up and stop you from sleeping and everything. And, you know, deal with them in a positive way so that they're not blocking your path anymore.
Absolutely.
So now you know, it's been 7.5 years, give or take, since you did that triathlon. I wanted to ask, you know, now that you've had this aftermath, what is your life and the lives of those around you like now, compared to where it was before you began your journey?
So, yeah, my life now is quite different. I was working before, and I'm not now. I decided after pancreatic cancer that I would retire and spend my time enjoying life as much as I could, and also trying to give back. So I'm now coaching people that want to run or do triathlon. So that's one thing, is coaching. I also do quite a bit of fundraising for the Ottawa Hospital.
Okay.
And getting a lot of enjoyment out of that. So the way that I do fundraising is we have a big race weekend here in Ottawa every year. It's in May, Ottawa Race Weekend, and it's a running event with events 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, and marathon. And so I lead a running team every year that participates in that race weekend. And in our through our training and participation in that race, we do various fundraising events to raise money. And so that's become a really big part of my life. And then since that started, then other people wanted to have me coach them, you know, around throughout the year, not just leading up to Ottawa Race Weekend, but throughout the year. So really fundraising and coaching. And the other difference now is I'm really trying to get my story out into the media to offer hope to other people that get diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Because like I said, when I was diagnosed, I didn't have any hope, just a lot of fear. I couldn't find any long-term survivors, and that's just devastating. So a big part of what I'm trying to do now is get myself out into social media and the media to offer that hope to other people.
Yeah, and I'm through my own, you know, journey with my sister. You know, I've been spending a lot more time doing research, and I'm sure you're familiar with PanCAN, the nonprofit organization. Probably the most prominent one around pancreatic cancer. And as I've gotten to know several of the board members, they have told me that these characteristics, these statistics are starting to change. And, you know, and I will try to put you in contact with the gentleman I know, because he now knows a lot of people who are surviving past 5 years. And he even has some that have gone past a decade or longer. So, you know, my hope, obviously, for you and my sister is that this research continues to, you know, to develop and evolve, and they find more and more ways. So you recently competed yet another, you know, not a triathlon, but another long distance race a few months ago, if I remember correctly. Can you tell me about that experience? I thought you did a 50 kilometer
ultra run. Yeah. So, my friend Janet and I, we like to go to Tucson every year in December, to run. They have an event there in Tucson, and we like to go there because at the beginning of December here in Ottawa, it's getting pretty cold and a little bit of snow on the ground. All the leaves have fallen off the tree. It's kind of grim. And in Tucson, obviously, it's beautiful and sunny. So my friend Janet chose this destination in Tucson at the beginning of the December, also because it's for my birthday. And we go down there and we spend some time in the sun and we do a race, a half marathon. Once I did the marathon there. And we do a little bit of Christmas shopping and then come home. So it's become a really nice annual thing for us to do together. And in 2020, it would be the Tucson Marathon's 50th anniversary of being around. And so they decided to add a 50 kilometer ultra to their marathon. And so I said to my friend Janet, I said, whoa, that would be fun to try that. Janet has only run one marathon. I've run around three or four. And so I said, this would be an interesting thing to try. And I asked her if she would do it with me, and she agreed. And then because of COVID in 2020, Tucson Marathon had to cancel that event. And so instead of us just not, I mean, we knew we couldn't travel to Tucson anyway, but then they actually canceled it. But we decided we would try to run the 50 kilometers here in Ottawa and again make it into a fundraising opportunity. And so we started our training in August, and we trained through until we ran the 50 kilometers at the end of October, and we raised just over $20,000. And we did actually complete the 50K, and we were both pretty happy that we were able to do that.
That's great.
That was a huge goal for both of us, and we accomplished it. So accomplishing it as well as raising over $20,000 was
yeah, very, those are both fantastic. So I did want to give a couple things, give you the chance to give a couple tidbits here. If people were interested in having you coach them, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, the easiest way to get a hold of me is through email. And my email is Cindy with an S, S-I-N-D-Y, hoop@gmail.com. I'm also very active on especially Instagram. And my handle there is Sinhoop, S-I-N-H-O-O-P. So people can easily reach me through Instagram. And I'm also on Facebook as Cindy Hooper with an S. So that would be how anybody could reach me. And I'd be happy to love to hear from any of your listeners.
Okay. And if any of the listeners would like to learn more about pancreatic cancer and how to help rid the world of this disease, what are some of the better sources that you have found?
Well, so as you mentioned, PanCAN is an incredible resource in the United States. And here in Canada, there's probably two sources that are really good. I would say Pancreatic Cancer Canada is one of them. And the other is Craig's Cause, which is an organization on the East Coast. So Pancreatic Cancer Canada or Craig's Cause would be the best two in Canada, in my opinion.
Okay. And I did want to, you know, kind of ask you a couple summary question. You know, I consider you such a winner for everything that you have had to overcome and accomplish. For the listeners out there, how do you develop a winner's mindset, especially when you're faced with what you were faced with?
I guess there's probably a couple things about my personality that are, you know, innate that I think I was born with. I probably developed them to a certain extent, but, you know, first of all, I have a type A personality. I'm extremely driven to achieve things, and whether that's, you know, going to university, getting a good job, working really hard, everything that I do it 100%. I'm a very hard worker, and I'm also very competitive. So when it comes to athletics, you know, when I went to run my first marathon, it wasn't good enough to just complete it. I wanted to qualify for Boston. And, you know, everybody said to me, oh, no, you don't qualify for Boston on your first marathon. And I was like, why not? And I set out to do that and did it. Right. So same with when I did my first Ironman, I wanted to qualify for the world championships. And again, everyone's like, oh, you don't do that on your first Ironman. You just want to go out to complete it. But I was like, no, I'm going to give it a shot. And so I trained super, super hard, and I was almost successful, only missed, as I told you, by two places. So I'm just, you know, very, very hard worker, very driven, very motivated to succeed, and competitive. And so I think having that type of personality really helps to, you know, develop that winner's mindset, because for me, if you're not succeeding and achieving and doing really well and being busy and working hard, that just wouldn't seem, I wouldn't be happy. I wouldn't feel fulfilled, you know, if I wasn't working hard and achieving and doing well. For other people, I think my advice would just be, you know, set a goal and what you want to achieve and stay focused, work hard, you know. Anything that's really good in life, it's not going to come easy. It's going to take hard work, and you just have to be determined. And again, like we talked about before, keep the goals small and achievable, you know, little steps to get you there, and just keep plugging away at it. Believe that anything is possible. Ironman's motto is anything is possible. And I had that put on, you know, I designed some shirts that my friends and family and athletes wear. And there's two things in particular on it. One is anything is possible. And the other motto that I believe in is MEMC, make every moment count. So set big goals, dream big, work hard, and believe that anything is possible.
Okay. And I guess I would end with this. I always like to end the episodes with this question. If there was anyone alive or deceased that you could meet, who would it be and why?
I think maybe my answer would have to be Martin Luther King.
Oh, interesting. And why Martin Luther King?
Oh, just everything that he achieved and the changes he made to history. I think it would be incredible to just sit down with him and, you know, hear how he thinks and what it was like for him, everything that he went through and achieving what he achieved. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great example. And it, I remember when I was in my first year at the Naval Academy, between our first year and our second year, we had these leadership sessions, and I got to be taught by two great admirals, Vice Admiral Lawrence and Admiral Stockdale, and they both had been prisoners of war. And it was interesting because both independently said that they have no regrets about being, that they were a prisoner of war. And then a few years later, I met Senator John McCain, and he said the same thing. And in fact, they said that adversity and struggle in their life ended up being one of the most positive things that influenced what they did with the rest of their life. And I think much could be said the same with Martin Luther King.
Yeah. If I think of a Canadian example, I think it would have to be Terry Fox. I mean, he faced such adversity at such a young age, and what he did with that and what he accomplished and everything that's happened since his death. I mean, he just really changed the way that, he's just changed so many things in Canada with regards to cancer awareness, cancer fundraising. So he would be another person that would be incredible to sit down and talk with.
That's great. And I'm going to end on this question. If any of the listeners who are here today are faced with a personal illness or a diagnosis of cancer, what advice would you give them about, how to deal with it?
I think the biggest thing is trying to stay positive and hanging on to hope that everything's going to be okay. That was probably the most difficult thing for me, was dealing with the fear and the uncertainty. And so trying to stay hopeful and positive and strong through, especially through the treatment, I think is huge. And also trying to stay active. I think a lot of people, when they get diagnosed with cancer and are starting to go through treatments, feel like they need to just save up all their energy to be able to, keep their immune system high and be able to deal with the cancer treatments. I personally think it's very, very important to stay active. And now there's a lot of research supporting that as well. So, make sure you get outside for some walks. If you enjoy, gardening, I mean, that's an activity, or, cycling. So try to stay active, try to stay as positive and hopeful as you can, and just believe that you're going to get through it.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your inspirational story with our listeners. And I'm so glad to have learned more about your story and finally got to meet you face to face via this medium.
Same here, John. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. As I said, it's very important to me, and it was really nice to meet you. And it'll be nice when we're emailing and being in touch in the future, that now we have a face to put to the name. So thank you.
You're welcome. What an amazing episode that was with Cindy Hooper, and hearing her explain how she overcame the odds of not only her pancreatic cancer diagnosis, but during chemotherapy, competing and finishing in an Ironman triathlon. How much courage does that take? And the message she shared about overcoming your mindset, overcoming adversity and your fears, was so inspiring. Are you ready to overcome your fears and start committing yourself to a passion-struck life? If you are, we're ready to help you. If you go to passionstruck.com right now, you'll be able to download the PassionStruck framework and connect with a member of our coaching team. Let us show you the systems and frameworks that we teach growth-minded individuals in order to build a passion-struck life that gets predictable results and gives you the freedom that you actually want. Go to passionstruck.com right now to get started. I'm going to end this episode like I do each one. Like Cindy, you can make a choice, work hard every day, step into the sharp edges, and do something that scares you each day. Now let's get igniting your potential. Thank you so much for joining us. The purpose of our show is to make passion go viral by sharing the knowledge and insights you can use to unlock your hidden potential. To hear more, please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you love this episode, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating
on iTunes, or if you simply tell three of your most driven and motivated friends about the show and post to your social accounts, that would help us grow our Passion Struck community too. If you want more tools to unlock your potential, please make sure to also visit our website, passionstruck.com, to sign up to our email list, as well as check out all the links and resources in the show notes. Be sure to tune in on Tuesdays and Fridays for our next episodes. And remember, make a choice, work hard, and step into your sharp edges. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.